آمد که نت میران دستیا گیانم چنم سرکیا شک سول میری تامینا تسمه ایشتی گوره وینا مها نما ام ویشنو پدایا کشنا پستایا بوتالی شیمتی بکتی ویدانتا سوامینی تینامینی نمستی سرسواتی دیفی گوره ونی پرادشارینی نیویسی سشونی آوادی باشتیا دیشتارینی Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Vamshakarpata Rubhyasha, Kripa Sindhu Bhyarevacha, Patitanam Pavanibhyo, Vaishnavibhyo Namo Nama, Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai. So thank you very much, dear devotees, to have invited me to come here. I'm feeling very grateful, and it was such a wonderful moment to hear from Maharaj. I felt, and I'm sure you felt, the mood of this special time. So I don't know, Prabhuji, it's so much to say. How much time do you want? Tell me, because you probably have to go to work.
So can you reply to Madhuji's question? What is the audience saying? What is our response to this question? They want to go into the timeless zone now. Okay. I think Krishna consciousness is beyond time.
Okay.
Right? So devotees are willing to go beyond time.
Okay.
And they like to respect your time, Madhuji. Right? Whatever makes you feel comfortable is fine. Devotees are already charged up and their appetites are already very strong. As Maharaj said, we are trained to sit for 6 hours at least. So we have no problems, and it's an air conditioned nice hall. No one is sweating here. No one is feeling any. Everything is just perfectly situated for hearing, you know, Russian Gatha. So
okay.
You take your call, Mataji.
Okay, we'll try. Prabhuji, do you know who was the first, one of the first Russians to come to Vrindavan? Who was the first, one of the first Russian to come to Vrindavan? Yeah. I don't say. I don't say. It was actually the last Tsar. It was Nikolai II. He came to Vrindavan on the Yamuna. It was in the 19th century. He came on a ship, and people could see very strange writing on the ship. And some officers came, white skin. And he was a prince at the time. And he found some local Brahmana. And they gave him a so-called blessing that he would rule over his country. But it was actually a curse, because we know his fate. So he was one of the first to come, and he had a painter with him who drew a temple just on the bank of the Yamuna. So I saw that in Yekaterinburg. So it was very interesting. So to tell the story we were saying in the temple this morning, myself, I was a 21-year-old girl, I was serving the deities in London, Shishirada Londonishvara. And one time I read something very interesting, that if the spiritual master is asking you to do a task a little difficult, and if you can say yes right away, you will make a lot of spiritual progress. I became very enthusiastic, and I rushed to the deities, and praying to them, You are so clever, my dear Lord Krishna. Can you make some arrangement that Srila Prabhupada would ask me to do something a little difficult? But please, please, my Lord, can you remind me to say yes at the right time. and then I forgot about it. But we heard something really, really strange. We heard that Srila Prabhupada was actually in the Soviet Union. And there was not much said about it because it was kept as a secret. I remember at the time thinking, so proud of Srila Prabhupada, like he's so brave, because we heard so many things, as Maharaj was describing, about the Soviet Union. You know, we heard about Solzhenitsyn, the books, how people were taken to jail, to prison, to camps. And I just couldn't believe Srila Prabhupada was there. So just to keep the historical thread, Shyamasundar Prabhu had actually sent a letter to a professor. He was the head of the Asian studies, you know, Professor Katovsky. And the letter said, my teacher would like very much to come and meet you and discuss Vedic philosophy. And Professor Katovsky was a very nice man, and he replied very politely, yes, I would be very happy. But that was not a proper invitation. But it worked well when Shyamasundar brought the letter to the Russian consulate. And they got a visa for Srila Prabhupada, Shyamasundar, and Aravinda Prabhu. So Srila Prabhupada came and he met Professor Katovsky at the institute. It was a very nice conversation. They discussed Vanashram Dharma. How actually even a society like the Soviet Union cannot be a classless society. Natural tendencies are there in every society. And it went on. Professor Katovsky wrote a very nice scholarly article. But then Srila Prabhupada said, can I meet the students? Because he was very interested in meeting the youth, because the youth everywhere else had made the difference. And Professor Katovsky said, oh, no students today. Then he asked, can I meet the teachers? No teachers today. Actually, Professor Katovsky was so afraid of KGB that he had chosen a day where nobody would be in the university. So Prabhupada was very disappointed. And as Maharaj discussed, he was very, very eager to meet some young people. And Shyamasundar explained how he could feel Srila Prabhupada being almost depressed, not meeting the youth. So Shyamasundar prayed, please, Lord Krishna, can you arrange that Prabhupada will meet some young people? And as described, when he went to the grocery store, a tourist grocery store, he met these two young people, and Shyamasundar was dressed in a dhoti, he had tilak, a sika, and the young boy asked him in English, actually, are you coming from India? So Srila Prabhupada said no, and he asked also, Shyamasundar said no. And then he asked if he had any jeans or Beatle records to sell. And Shyamasundar said, no, I don't have any records from the Beatles, like we can see in Yadubara's film. But he said, my spiritual master met the Beatles. And that young boy was very, very interested in philosophy, was studying philosophy. And he had this young Indian friend called actually Madhukar. And Madhukar, so he knew a little bit about the philosophy of India. So he came to see Srila Prabhupada. And it was very, very intense. Shamasundar said he never saw Prabhupada giving so much to one person in such a short time. But Anantashanti Prabhu said Prabhupada didn't talk so much. So the truth must be between. And Anatoly at the time asked about how to spread Krishna consciousness in Russia. He asked, should I become a pope in order to spread Krishna consciousness? And Srila Prabhupada smiled and said, it's not necessary. And he was talking also about Vanashram Dharma. So we didn't know anything about that. And Srila Prabhupada came to London. First he came to Paris, and then he came to London. And one time I was called upstairs in Srila Prabhupada's room. And I remember feeling a little nervous. I must have made some mistake in the menial service I was doing for Srila Prabhupada. So I knocked on the door, and Srila Prabhupada said, come in. And Shyamasundar Prabhu was standing just beside Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada, when I offered my obeisances, I came in, and Prabhupada said to come close. And he asked in a very normal tone, he said, Mandakini, would you like to go to Russia and to marry this boy, Anatoly? And by the grace of Lord Chaitanya, help to spread the mission there. And I was shocked for half a second, because at that time I didn't want to get married. But then I remembered my prayers to the Lord. And I told, I looked at Srila Prabhupada and I told him, yes, Srila Prabhupada. And then he had a big, big smile. We call it an oceanic smile. And he asked Shyamasundar, please, you arrange. So then became a wonderful adventure. As Maharaj said, it was a spirit of adventure. And I had to take a tourist tour. And the tourist tour, the objective was to go every evening to see the Bolshoi ballet dancers. Then same instructions I got from Shyamasundar. Do not take any books. Do not take neck beads. Do not take chanting beads. So I just took a normal necklace to chant on. But something interesting happened during the first visit, the only visit of Srila Prabhupada. Actually, you all know Malati Prabhu, yes? So she has so many wonderful qualities, and amazingly, she has one quality that's we can call spiritual disobedience. You know? Shyamasundar said no books, but she actually thought Srila Prabhupada is coming to the Soviet Union and no books. This is impossible. So she took a little blue Bhagavad Gita, I think a pocket Bhagavad Gita, and she put it without telling anyone in a Shyamasundar suitcase. And then time came for the team to go through the immigration. And somehow or other, you know, the officer said, open the suitcase. And there was some gesture, and Shyamasundar's suitcase fell on the floor. And there, shining of its own glories, was the little blue Bhagavad Gita. So Shyamasundar's face became white. and then somehow or other, by Yoga Maya's potency, the officer asked about a picture that fell, and Shyamasundar said it's family. And then he said, just pick up everything and close your suitcase. So that was the first book. The Bhagavad Gita by the quality of Malati. Thank you. So then I had to go back to Paris to get my visa, a tourist visa. And for the first time, I'd been a devout Brahmacharini for 2 years. For the first time, I had to put some civil clothes, and it felt really strange. And I joined the tourist group, and I was told, like Maharaj said, beware of the tourist guide. They will report any strange behavior to KGB. So I joined the tourist group in the plane. And then when we came into Moscow, I always remember it very clearly. Moscow was actually black, white, and gray. I don't know if you had the same impression. There was no color. And in the street, people were just not looking at each other. There was a sense of oppression. And also very funny for the one who have been in Moscow. At the time in the big Prospect Avenue, only one or two cars. You know, now it's an awful traffic jam, same as in India. You know? So then I went to the hotel, and it was very heavy architecture, like very Stalinian. I think it was a Metropole hotel. And it was, I put my my suitcase in the room, and it was time for dinner. And the tourist guide, she was speaking French, and Russian lady. She started proposing some menu. So she asked, who wants that dish of meat with a few vegetables, potatoes? So some people were saying, yes, I take that menu. Then she proposed some fish. And then for the other one who are left, we have some nice egg preparation. So all of a sudden, I felt myself left alone completely, and everybody was looking at me. And I had to say, I'm sorry, I'm a vegetarian. And it was very, very strange at that time, especially in Russia, to be a vegetarian, like it was 71. So I felt really bad because I felt I didn't even start anything and I spoiled everything. It's completely finished, you know. She's going to report, and I felt a complete failure for Srila Prabhupada. So I went in such a state of mind upstairs, and I was going to my room, and there was a young, tall boy looking quite stern. And he came to me, and he was waiting, and he says, are you Monique? That was my civil name. And I thought, oh no, Krishna already is from KGB, you know. And I say, yes, that's my name. And he said, I'm Anatoly. So I said, Haribo, Prabhu. Then we went in the room. He said, let's go to your room. And he started to have a very strange behavior. He started to look everywhere, under the bed, behind the paintings. And I thought that that young man looks really a little strange, you know. Then he said, let's go out. We'll talk downstairs. And he explained to me that it's a lot of microphones, and your room is bugged. We cannot talk there. And at the time, I'd been in the temple for hardly 2 years as a Brahmacharini. And I thought I was really, open-minded. And but actually, I was quite fanatical. So first thing I told to Anatoly, I said, of course, Prabhu, you are following the four regulative principles. And he looked at me, he had met Prabhupada for hardly 2 days. So he said, most of the time, I do. So I said, oh, but you don't eat fish, meat, or egg, don't you? Oh, I try not. And it went on. I went on asking about, you know, the regulative principle, like you don't take any intoxicant, no tea, no coffee. Oh, most of the time was the same answer. So I thought, oh, Krishna, what's going to happen? Then we came down, and there was one of the most beautiful Russian girl, Svetlana. And he said, this is my cousin, but she didn't look at him as a cousin will do. So I didn't ask him about the fourth regulative principle. And I was wondering, what am I going to do? So then, in the beginning, my first visit, I was supposed to marry, Prabhupada wanted me to marry Anatoly to get a residential permit and to assist, to teach him whatever I knew about Krishna consciousness. So he thought it has to be some kind of a romantic, you know, feeling. So he started to take me to visit beautiful places. But at this time in the temples, we were taught not to waste a single minute. So I was feeling very nervous. Like, you know, I'm wasting Srila Prabhupada's time with the Bolshoi, a ballet in the evening, and now with this romantic visit. So I told Anatoly, you know, Prabhu, we have to preach. And then he says, Haribol, Prabhu. Actually, he was very, very submissive and humble in that first, you know, in that first period. So then began the most ecstatic time. I had exactly the same impression that Maharaj describes. We were visiting some friends, but in a very discreet way. We were going to their houses and talking from Bhagavad Gita. And I felt these Russian people, they were so eager for spiritual life, so inquisitive. And they were completely ready to risk their lives, their freedom, their mental health, just to learn about, you know, to know the answer about to their existential questions. So from that time on, I became very indebted to them, and I wanted to serve them as much as I could. So what we were doing was very simple. I was teaching Anatoly, who became very soon Ananta Shanti, you know, the basic things, how to chant, how to cook prasadam, how to offer prasadam. And as Maharaj said, we were queuing long queues to get a little cabbage, potatoes, carrots, some bread, little cheese. And then to teach him how to chant Hare Krishna, Hare Rama. Yes, yes, Maharaj, thank you. And preaching from the Bhagavad Gita. So either we were going to visit people in their homes, or else we were actually, they were coming to the little flat he shared with his mother. So a few, that happened for about 6 years. I tried for 6 years to get what Prabhupada wanted. It was a residential permit visa. But somehow or other, the KGB, the secret police, already knew that we wanted to spread Krishna consciousness, and they never gave any residential permit. But just a few things, as Maharaj described, it was the sensation of being the witness of what Lord Krishna and Srila Prabhupada wanted. For example, one of my most extraordinary thing I was experiencing in Krishna consciousness happened maybe the year after. Shyamasundara told me We got some Srimad Bhagavatam printed, and it was first, you know, that Srila Prabhupada brought the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam on the Charaduta. It was in 3 volumes. But then he asked the devotees to edit again the Srimad Bhagavatam, and 2 volumes came with the blue cover, with you know, Mahavishnu and all the planets. So he said, Mandakini, would you take this Srimad Bhagavatam with you to Moscow? I said, yes, yes. And I was thinking, what's the best way? Maybe the best way to avoid actually the immigration problems. So I decided to take the train. And I took the train with my suitcase, and inside were the beautiful Srimad Bhagavatam. Then one lady came, an elderly lady, and she said, I hope you don't have any religious books with you, because the militians, they become mad with the religious books. So I told her, no, I don't have any religious book, don't worry. She said, and you know, you cannot hide them anywhere. They will look in your suitcase, they will look under the beds. So I said, no, it's all right, I don't have any religious books. But then I didn't know what to do. So I prayed to Lord Krishna, and I asked him, my dear Lord, you are so intelligent, you can do anything. You are the supreme mystic. So I'm sure you want these books to go to Moscow. Please make some arrangement. And after some time, I saw an Indian gentleman in the corridor of the train, and his wife was with him. And I thought, maybe I can put in his suitcase. It won't look so strange because it comes from India. So I started some small talk with him and his wife. And then he asked me, do you have any friends in Moscow? I said, yes, I was not married yet. Yes, I have a Russian friend, Anatoly, and I have also a young Indian friend. And he said, oh, very interesting. What's the name of your Indian friend? Maybe I know him. And I gave the name. The name was Madhukar Tandon, if I remember correctly. And when I said the name, his eyes became very, very big, expressing surprise. And he said, but he's the son of my boss. You know? And then I became so excited within. I thought, Krishna, you're so clever. Because I remembered the profession of Madhukar's father. He had a very, very high post in the Indian consulate. So I made a big smile to that young Indian gentleman and said, oh, you know, I have a gift for the son of your boss. And it's the Bhagavad Purana. Maybe you can help me. Because, you know, the officers, they are a little mad about any philosophical books. Could you put it in your diplomatic suitcase? And because, you know, like a diplomatic suitcase, like, for example, an Indian diplomatic suitcase, it's like India itself. The militians cannot open it because it might be some strategic document. And indeed, Srimad Bhagavatam was a very, very strategic document. So he came, he brought the suitcase, and I put the Srimad Bhagavatam in it, and he closed the suitcase. And he said, I'm going to go for holiday to Poland, to Warsaw, and when I come back, I will give the books to my boss. And indeed, it was so extraordinary, and I felt very privileged to be a witness of Krishna. When, you know, when I didn't know what to do, I could not do anything. Then Krishna and Prabhupada, they take over. And I wish all of you to have a similar experience where Krishna and Srila Prabhupada and the spiritual master actually taking over. And that then we just feel witnesses. So then the militians, they came and they look very fierce. And indeed, they looked everywhere. They looked under the bed. They looked absolutely everywhere. And I was trying not to smile, not to irritate them. But inside, I was feeling so much joy and thinking, you cannot do anything, Krishna. Krishna is so clever, and when he wants something, nobody can go against it. And then I remembered that beautiful verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam. That verse says, when Lord Krishna left the planet, he came as his literary incarnation, the Srimad Bhagavatam. Then it says that this Bhagavat Purana is more brilliant than thousands of suns, and it will dissipate the darkness of Kali. It will illuminate the Kali Yuga. So that's absolutely what happened in Russia. After 6 years, I didn't come. Srila Prabhupada at one point decided that I should stay in the West, that it was becoming very dangerous, and since I didn't have the residential permit, it was not really worth trying to go again. But I remember I was so attached to that service, so I asked Srila Prabhupada, "Oh, Srila Prabhupada, can I try one more time?" And Srila Prabhupada is so kind. He's always encouraging, you know, the devotees. So he knew I was not going to get the residential permit. But he said, yes, of course you can try another time. Meanwhile, I went for 6 years, about two or three times a year, because it was very, very expensive. But the result was never a residential permit. Even at one point, we got married. We went to the town hall of Moscow. Adanta Shanti found two witnesses from the street. And I didn't understand any words of what was said, but he told me, at one point, I will make a special movement, and you have to say da, meaning yes in Russian. And at one point he did make a move with his hand, and I said da, and I became Mrs. Pinyayev at that time. So I wanted to tell you how Srila Prabhupada actually felt about the preaching in the communist countries. You all heard, and maybe you met our dear Bhaktitirtha Swami. You know how dear Radhanath Swami assisted Bhaktitirtha Swami during the last 2 months of his life. So Bhaktitirtha Swami at this time was called Ganesham, and he was part of a library party. And the library party was distributing Srila Prabhupada books in the universities of the world. And they went a lot to the to Eastern Europe. So Bhaktitirtha Swami actually told Srila Prabhupada how difficult it was there, how people didn't have much to eat. And Srila Prabhupada felt very, very concerned. He had tears in his eyes. And he told that actually material nature is withholding the basic necessity of life because of the atheistic position the government is adopting. And I went back 40 years later for the 40th anniversary 36 years later, it was such a wonderful scene to see how Moscow had become filled with colors. It was no longer black and white. It was absolutely filled with colors, and people were not frightened anymore. They were looking at each other happily, and nature was not beholding anymore the basic necessity of life. Devotees were having very opulent prasadam, not only cabbage, potatoes, and carrots. Yeah. So, but Prabhupada said at that time that they will not even get milk, butter, and sugar. So Bhaktitirtha Swami was very moved to see Prabhupada a big concern, not only from the spiritual point of view, but also from the material point of view. So I wanted to also, Srila Prabhupada was saying at that time that the preaching in Russia is the most important we have done. It is exceeding anything else in the world. And at that time he said, one book distributed there equals 1,000 books somewhere else. You know, it's a... because what happened at that time when the books were not printed, one book, the Srimad Bhagavatam, for example, was there. Ananta Shanti Prabhu would give the book to someone else. And day and night, the devotees were just writing by hand the books. And when it was finished writing, they would give the book to someone else who was writing day and night also. So some American devotees went one time to Moscow to meet the devotees, to meet Ananta Shanti and the first devotees. And as Maharaj was describing, they didn't know how Ananta Shanti looked like. And he didn't know how they looked like because they couldn't send pictures. And the communication was done by telephone using kind of codes. So what they knew they had to meet in a special park. And they thought of some scheme. When a young man was coming near them, they used to go, Hare Krishna. But nobody responded to that, you know. And after some time, they saw some young men wearing like an Indian kurta, white, looking very effulgent. So they didn't have to do Hare Krishna. They knew it was Ananta Shanti. And it took them to the little flat the devotees were having programs. And he told them, you just sit down. You cannot move until you tell me everything you know about Krishna consciousness. Because we don't know when you are going to come again. And they saw devotees were very, very austere. For example, they had a strange habit. They took their cold shower, and it was cold in Russia in winter, but they didn't dry themselves. And they asked, why you don't dry themselves? They said, oh, Ananta Shanti told us, you know, we have to be very austere like that. And one time it was Janmashtami, and they were used to a very, very big feast in America. So they say, what can we buy? He told them, nothing. Then they say, if we go out of Moscow, what can we buy? He said, absolutely nothing. You know? There was another devotee who came at that time. He was actually the first GBC. His name was Ansaduta. And he used to meet Ananta Shanti on the way to India. So he used to bring harmonium or different books, and he was waiting in a hall, in the hall of the hotel. And at that time, he would have a big bag with the books or harmonium, and an entrechanté would come and very discreetly take the bag like that. So let's just to make you understand a little bit the personality of that first devotee. He was very, very bright, very intelligent, and he tried always to preach to the intelligentsia, because he couldn't preach openly, and he was always approaching the intelligentsia. So he always had to try to find schemes to spread Krishna consciousness. So one thing he will do when it was summer would be to sit at a table, at a coffee table, and open the Srimad Bhagavatam at the pages where the beautiful paintings were. Then people would be very interested to, they never saw such paintings. So they will ask, what is this? And then he will explain, he will preach about the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. Another thing he will do, he will buy, they had no books, he would buy big bouquets of red roses, offer them to Krishna, so it will become prasadam. And then he will go out, dress very nicely, and he will take a rose and approach the people and say, please smell that rose. At least you are going to get a human form of life. And because devotees had a very, very strong faith in prasadam, in whatever form it was. So the police would come and would ask, what are you doing? And he would say, oh, today I'm in love, and I want to share that love with everybody else. And the police would laugh and let him go. Another thing he did at that time, he registered a scientific institute. And in Russia at that time, science was like God. You know, if it was scientific, you could do anything. So that society was, it was a scientific institute. But what was the objective of that scientific institute? It was actually to study the power of the Vedic mantra on plants, animals, and human beings. So in that scientific institute, you had a lot of green plants, and you had a few cats and dogs, and you had a lot of devotees chanting Hare Krishna. And there was no problem because it was scientific. Another thing, but I always say not to be imitated by brahmacharis. He used to go to nightclubs and places where young people would dance. And he was looking, he was quite good, and he was dressing very nicely. So at some point, some ladies would come and start some conversation. So then Anantashanti would ask the lady, would you like to come home? And he would take the lady to the flat, very small flat, he shared with his mother, and then he would preach from Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, like that. So after came a time where the International Book Fair of Moscow took place, and with the help of Kirti Raj, all of Srila Prabhupada's books were actually presented in that book fair, like Maharaj was describing that. So that was a great success. And a few years later, there was an article in the New York Times saying, at this international book fair, that was the first time the books of Esi Bhaktivedanta Swami were there, and the Hare Krishna, the seed was planted in Russia. So I'll go a little quick because I don't want to take too much of your time. But at one point, Harikesh Prabhu, then Swami, and Kirtiraj Prabhu came to Moscow. And the devotees, they kind of gave up at that time the very discreet way of preaching. And they arranged for a bigger program, and they rented a place. And then they didn't know, but actually that place they rented was very close from a local KGB branch. And they had a big kirtan. And at some point, there was a big knock on the door, and that was the KGB. And for the first time, they came, they took the names of the devotees. They took Harikesh and Kirtiraj Prabhu. They escorted them to their hotel, and they had to leave the country. But then it became a time for persecution very soon. So the leaders were taken first, but the leaders were very, very quickly teaching the younger devotees how to take responsibility. And the second generation did the same because everybody knew they were going to be arrested. So the time was actually very, very difficult. But the devotees, they exhibited so much faith in Srila Prabhupada and so much determination. They were ready to give up their life, their mental health, everything to spread Krishna consciousness. So it's a few examples. Maybe you have read already about Ananta Shanti Prabhu. He was taken to a mental hospital, and they experienced on him very, very heavy drugs. And these drugs were so they were so terrible that you couldn't. You all work in the hospital, do you? More or less. I don't know the name exactly of the drug, but the person with the injection couldn't keep for more than a few seconds the same position. You had to turn from one side to the other, feeling so much burning pain in your body. Also, it was impossible to keep one mind for more than a few seconds. You know, the drug was completely disturbing. You couldn't keep a thought in your mind. So Ananta Shanti Prabhu was explaining that when he was trying to chant louder, they would give double injections. And he should have died, but he took full shelter in Srila Prabhupada and in Lord Krishna's, protection. But I will read to you just a few things. It's Indradyumna Swami in the 90s made an interview of him. Did anybody read that interview? You can find on internet. No, it's on 7th. So I don't read everything, you can find it, but Ananta Shanti, in his own words, "I was in prison and they tried to present every person who was following Krishna consciousness in this country as crazy. Then they put me in a mental prison, a mental jail. The doctors said they were taught that religious believers are insane, and that only insane person can think that there is a God, that there is spirit, that we are not these bodies, but spiritual spark. So they gave me drugs 3 times a day. It was so bad that I was only able to lie in bed. The drug was special. It made it impossible to concentrate on anything. If I tried to chant loudly, they would give me such large doses that I could have died. Lying on the bed, I had so much material discomfort. These drugs make you restless and force you to change the position of your body all the time. I was feeling very weak and so much discomfort. It was just like torture for months and years. The only pause in the torture was when I was sleeping at night. So then he said it was not an ordinary prison, but it had special cells for psychiatric prisoners. It had the bad aspect of both a mental asylum and prison. We were living in small cells with about 20 people in each. There was not enough fresh air. We took baths irregularly, sometimes not for 23 days. Many people there had insects on their bodies. The entire place was very dirty. The food was prepared very badly. People there often had their teeth fall out and their gums would bleed. Anantashanti said, I was taking very little food. Everything was a problem there. Even the janitors were criminals. Everyone was so much disturbed. So, you know, it was really very, very, very hellish. But then Perestroika was coming. And one doctor says, time is working for you. Because of the changing in our society and because of the help from abroad, sooner or later you will be released. Yeah. So one big professor came to tell if Anantashanti could be considered sane or not and could be released. So at the end, he told Anantashanti's doctor, yes, he's completely sane. We will release him, but we will leave his diagnosis for now because his condition may appear again in the future. So when the doctor said this, Anantashanti asked him to ask the professor, who can guarantee that you will not go crazy after some time? So the doctor said, yes, I asked him this question, and he told me that he also finds the symptoms of mental disease within himself. So Anantashanti Prabhu, on the 40th anniversary, I saw him very briefly, the 40th anniversary of Srila Prabhupada coming to Moscow. I saw him very briefly, but we had a long conversation on the phone. And one time, he described something that happened in a prison. It was a very dark cell. And the KGB was trying to break his will. And at that time, he felt so discouraged. He was thinking, I cannot take any more torture. And I'm going to say whatever they want me to say. You know, because what we have to remember, the KGB actually only asked the devotees to say publicly that Krishna consciousness was very bad, that a vegetarian diet was harmful for the health of the people, to agree on that. And the devotees, in one way, could have said that and carry on practicing secretly, but they didn't. They just decided not to do that, you know, to stand for Krishna consciousness. And if they, maybe we can think, because they did like that, then you know, now Krishna consciousness can be freely practiced in Russia. So at that time, our Anantashanti Prabhu, he thought, I cannot take it anymore. But then something miraculous happened. It was from inside his heart. All of a sudden, Krishna manifested himself as a beautiful verse of Bhagavad Gita. That's the verse about the soul, that the soul can never be scattered by the wind. The soul can never be drawn in the water, or it cannot be burnt by fire. And like sometimes we read that verse, it's very beautiful, but it was something else. It was like a complete realization that Krishna became that verse. And all the fear disappeared. And he completely realized at the time that actually I'm the soul. I'm free. Although I'm in the jail, they cannot do anything to me. And the fear disappeared, and he became strong again. You know, Krishna really helped. And it's very beautiful to when you hear these first devotees from the Soviet Union. They had a very special relationship with Krishna. For example, there was another one called Baladraj Prabhu. He was in a similar situation. He was in a jail, and he had been tortured. He was again taken to be tortured. And when he left the jail, it was only one man. Then when he came back, two men were in the jail, cell. And he was half conscious, but the second man just turned around. And then he saw clearly Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada had a chada. And Srila Prabhupada had actually tears in his eyes. And he said to Baladraj, he said, "I never wanted this for you. I never wanted this for you. I never wanted this for you." One more incident that took place, more joyful, it was when devotee called, I never get his name straight, maybe Prabhu, you know, Panchajana Maharaj. Forgive me, maybe, if you remember. So, he's in Mayapur, yeah. So, that devotee, Parjanya Maharaj. And if I'm not wrong, it's a name for Indra. It's a name for, yeah. So, he was taken with a few devotees into a camp, a labor camp. And it was in the middle of Russia. People were very simple, very good-hearted people. But in that village, it had not been raining for many, many days or maybe weeks. And some people of the village, they came to the guard of the camp and they asked him, "We heard some holy man is in the camp. Can we go and talk to him?" And the guard said, yes, you can. So they came and they approached our devotee. And they said, "Holy man, we had a very severe drought. And actually all the culture, all our crops are going to be finished. What should we do, holy man?" And he said, "Well, you have to cook a vegetarian foodstuff. Offer them to the holy men in the village, and you have to pray to God." So they went, and they were simple village people. They did that. They cooked some very nice vegetarian foodstuff, and they started praying to God. And the rain started to pour and pour and pour. So they were very, very happy. But then they came back 1 week later to see again Parjanya Maharaj. "Holy man, we have a big problem. The rain doesn't stop." our crops are going to be destroyed. What shall we do? She says, well, you cook some very nice vegetarian foodstuff, you offer it to the holy persons in the village, and you pray to God. And then they did, and the rain stopped. So, needless to say that the devotees were not suffering in that camp. One last, of course, it's so many examples, but one last thing to show that when the devotees were undergoing so many severe conditions, Krishna really gave them even some mystic powers. There was one devotee who was taken to the jail, and his wife had two children, and the judge was really, really harsh. So she cursed the judge. But, you know, devotees are very nice, and the curse for us, we can say it's a blessing, you know. But she felt that the judge was really unjust, and she says, I cursed you, that somebody very close to you will become a devotee. And then perestroika happened. And there was civil war, into two countries of the ex-Soviet Union. And devotees were distributing prasad. And people were starving, so they were queuing to get the prasad from the devotees. And she saw that judge in the queue, you know, taking the food from the devotees. And maybe some weeks later, there was a young man who joined the temple. He was really blissful. And she came to hear his name, and he was actually the son of the judge. So, dear devotees, time is up, and I know you have to work tomorrow, to serve. Just, we cannot talk about the Soviet Union and all these our heroes without talking about the beautiful play you made. And you will send me the link. We cannot not mention the Asachi Sutta Prabhu. And we can meditate together how, you know, he was going to be liberated in maybe 28 days or something like that. But what was it, pneumonia he had?
Tuberculosis.
And we know how blissful he was, how everybody loved him and Salva Bhavana, how they made this beautiful japa beads with the inside of that indigest salted bread in Alachua. Kirtiraj Prabhu showed me one of these chapa made from the salted bread. And that's so beautiful. His passing away will remind us of the passing away of Bhishma Dev. You remember he asked to have a white sheet, and he put it as a dhoti. Then he put some tilak from toothpaste, and he has to be shaved, and he was sitting, smiling, and chanting Hare Krishna, never complaining, from the pain. It must have been terrible pain. And he had a self friend who loved him, although he was not a devotee, really convinced, who left for some time. And when he came back, our Sachi Sutta Prabhu was still sitting in lotus, smiling, hand in the bead bag. No, I don't know if he had the bead bag, and just the beads. And then he was talking to him. He didn't answer. And he says, but why you're not answering me? Why you're just smiling and not chanting? And he came closer, and Sachi Sutta Prabhu had left the body. It's some really heroes. and beautiful devotees. So, you know, now when we are going to even in India for big festival, sometimes you may see some of these veterans. When we go to the big festivals in Russia or in Ukraine, we see them and they are so humble. They are just queuing up. Although us, you know, Prabhupada disciples or spiritual leaders, they just put red carpet. But these heroes, nobody knows them. And so every time, if you have a chance to meet them, you can try to express your gratitude to them, to serve them, to tell them how grateful you are. And some of them are following strictly, some of them not anymore, but still they are very, very special. There is a very wonderful Russian spiritual teacher, Chaitanya Chandracharan Prabhu. We talked a lot about these first devotees, and he said something very, very true. He said they were extraordinary people doing extraordinary things at an extraordinary time. And some of them, they don't know how to act in an ordinary time. So if we have any opportunity, we should really express our gratitude to them. Maharaj, just to conclude, Maharaj was talking about the extraordinary book distribution that happened after Perestroika, when things were just opening up. And devotees were doing team, what they call 24/7. For example, in the mining, complex, they were going all day, all night to distribute books. And people were so eager to get the books. And if I understood, you were there at that time? Yes? Maybe after you can say a few things? No? But I met in Alachua one devotee, Jagadish Prabhu. And he told me a story about one devotee called Vararoa. You know? Yeah, I can... Yeah, Vararoa. And I will pass some pictures of the book distributors. Unfortunately, when I was in Russia last time, I had one picture where Maharaj was there. But the boy, I think he gave it to me, but I didn't find it. So the first picture is Vararoa Prabhu. He was such a distributor. He didn't care. He was so selfless. He was going to nuclear plants. You can pass like that. He was distributing books in nuclear plants, and unfortunately, he got cancer, and he got very, very sick. And Jagadish Prabhu only met him, you know, practically on his deathbed. And he was very careful about, you know, trying to help him in any way he could. He could just eat some strawberry puree. You know, he was so sick. But then the other boys, Jagadish Prabhu's team, were carrying on distributing books. And one time they came to a big factory in Volgograd, Stalingrad before. And there was a big Russian lady at the desk. And then they came and they said they wanted to present Bhagavad Gita. So when she saw the book, she became very, very enthused. And she said, wait a minute, I have to take this book to my director. So she took the book to the director. Then she says, we want thousands of Bhagavad Gita. So, and she told the story that a little while ago, when there was an economical crisis in Russia, a young man dressed like them came with this book. So they wanted to buy the books. There was no currency in Russia. And instead of salary, they wanted to give the Bhagavad Gita to all the workers. So, and it happened that the person who actually came with that first Bhagavad Gita was Varahora. And they said to the devotee, "We cannot give you money, but we can give you what we produce in the factory." But guess what they were producing? Vodka. and she said, "We can give you the vodka and you can sell it." But Varahora couldn't accept. You know, devotees cannot sell vodka. So it was so wonderful that although he left his body and he was a true hero, Krishna made his service complete by sending another team of devotees to complete the service. So just, we could talk for so long about what's happening now in Russia. Devotees are very extraordinary, and extraordinary things happen. For example, there is one thing told by a Russian sannyasi who was traveling. They were distributing books all over Russia. They were in a van. And all of a sudden, in the middle of nowhere in the country, they see a man looking a little bit like a devotee, but not quite. He had some kind of a dhoti, but it was not really a dhoti. He had a shaved head, some kind of mark. So they said, "Let's go. Let's see what's happening." And they asked the man, "Who are you?" He never met devotees before, but he read a book. And it was a book about the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. And he saw how they were dressed. So he tried to imitate. Because in the book, he said he was very enthused by the personality of the Goswamis. Because he read that the Goswamis, they had no work. And he didn't have any work. And he read that they were sleeping under a different tree every day, and he was homeless. And he liked the philosophy, but he was a bum, actually. And actually, he took the task of preaching to the bum community all over Russia, you know? So extraordinary things like that happen. And so many, many things we could talk about, but they are very extraordinary devotees. They have a vision, or Prabhupada talks to them in dreams, and first they think it's just, I'm just crazy, you know, they don't tell anybody. But after, when the dream comes back, they actually are able to do what Prabhupada asks in the dream, although it seems impossible in the beginning. So it's spreading like wildfire. And it's like in the world now, India and Russia, Krishna consciousness is spreading. So dear devotees, I thank you very much to have allowed me to, you know, to come with you. And, you are doing such a wonderful service. I first came here, was it 2011? Yamuna Devi was here. So I came to see Yamuna on a Christmas day. She was taken care of by you here. And she was so pleased with the care she was receiving, although sometimes it was hard for her to be served like that. Yeah. So it's a wonderful service to give not only physical care, but spiritual care. And Srila Prabhupada would be so, so happy with this Bhaktivedanta Hospital that you, with your service, you know, guided by dear Radhanath Swami. So thank you very much. If anybody wants to share anything. Yeah, yeah, it's very late. Yeah, so thank you for this beautiful evening.
So, we want to again express our deepest gratitude, Mataji, for bringing back those old memories of Russian preaching and being as a part of that particular event in a very special way. You included us in that particular event. So, we thank you very much for sharing. Let us thank Mataji by loudly chanting Hari Bol. Vandana Kiri Mataji ki. Prabhupada ki. Okay, before we depart, very small answer, I take a half a minute more. Today, I think you learned this in the temple, that this DVD was released. This is the film which we all saw on Prabhupada in the various theaters. So that is now available in DVD format for all of us to take and to share with our friends and colleagues and whomsoever. This is a discounted copy. I was told in the morning it is $25 in US. Is huge money for Indians, but in India it is being sold only for 350 rupees. So that's available outside. Yadupar Prabhu has put a table there, so each one can avail as many copies as you want for self and your friends. Thank you. Hare Krishna. And Prasadam of course is waiting. Don't worry, Prasad is still there. So Prasad is still there. So those who are not in Prasad, please honor Prasad also.
Okay, so, Mataji, bye.